don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I've got a quick read today. I'm going to jump on some, there's been some major topics going on and events unfolding in a lot of the altcoins recently. We talked about the Verge hack sometime last week, and I thought that was a really good article by Daniel Goldman, and he's got another article on the topic, which I think we'll be getting to soon. But before that, today I want to hit one on Coindesk.com, and it is titled, Blockchains Once Feared 51% Attack is Now Becoming Regular, by Alyssa Hertig. So, we're going to go ahead and jump in. Monacoin, Bitcoin Gold, Zencash, Verge, and now Litecoin Cash. At least five cryptocurrencies have recently been hit with an attack that used to be more theoretical than actual, all in the last month. In each case, attackers have been able to amass enough computing power to compromise these smaller networks, rearrange their transactions, and abscond with millions of dollars in an effort that's perhaps the crypto equivalent of a bank heist. More surprisingly, though, may be that so-called 51% attacks are a well-known and dangerous cryptocurrency attack vector. While there may have been some instances of such attacks working successfully in the past, they haven't exactly been all that common. They've been so rare, some technologists have gone as far as to argue miners on certain larger blockchains would never fall victim to one. The age-old in crypto time argument? It's too costly, and they wouldn't get all that much money out of it. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. New York University computer science researcher Joseph Bonneau released research last year featuring estimates of how much money it would cost to execute these attacks on top of blockchains by simply renting power rather than buying all the equipment. One conclusion he drew? These attacks were likely to increase, and it turns out he was right. Quote, generally, the community thought that this was a distant threat. I thought it was much less distant and have been trying to warn of the risk, he told CoinDesk, adding, even I didn't think it would start happening this soon, end quote. Inside the attacks. Stepping back, cryptocurrencies aim to solve a long-standing computer science issue called the double spend problem. Essentially, without creating an incentive for computers to monitor and prevent bad behavior, messaging networks were unable to act as money systems. In short, they couldn't prevent someone from spending the same piece of data 5 or even 1,000 times at once without trusting a third party to do all the dirty work. That's the entire reason they work as they do, with miners, a term that denotes the machines necessary to run blockchain software, consuming electricity and making sure no one's money is getting stolen. To make money using this attack vector, hackers need a few pieces to be in place. For one, an attacker can't do anything they want when they've racked up a majority of the hash power. But they are able to double spend transactions under certain conditions. Wouldn't make sense to amass all this expensive hash power to double spend a $3 transaction on a cup of coffee. An attacker will only benefit from this investment if they're able to steal thousands or even millions of dollars. As such, hackers have found various clever ways of making sure the conditions are just right to make them extra money. That's why attackers of Monacoin, Bitcoin Gold, Zencash, and Litecoin Cash have all targeted exchanges holding millions in cryptocurrency. By amassing more than half of the network's hashing power, the Bitcoin Gold attacker was able to double spend two very expensive transactions sent to an exchange. Through three successful attacks of Zencash, a lesser-known cryptocurrency that's a fork of privacy-minded Zcash, the attacker was able to run off with more than 21,000 Zen, the Zencash token, worth well over $500,000 at the time of writing. Though the attack on Verge was a bit different, since the attacker exploited insecure rules to confuse the network into giving him or her money. Though it's clear the attacks targeted Verge's lower protocol layer, researchers are debating whether they technically constitute 51% attacks. Small coins at risk. But if these attacks were uncommon for such a long time, why are we suddenly seeing a burst of them? In conversation with CoinDesk, researchers argued there isn't a single clear reason. Rather, there are a number of factors that likely contributed. For example, it's no coincidence smaller coins are the ones being attacked. Since they've attracted fewer miners, it's easier to buy or rent the computing power necessary needed to build up a majority share of the network. Chart: estimated profitability of 51% attacks. Bitcoin Gold: amount stolen, $1,860,000. Estimated cost of 1 hour attack, $3,936. Zencash: amount stolen, $500,000. Estimated cost of 1 hour attack, $5,237. Monacoin: amount stolen, $90,000. Estimated cost of 1 hour attack, $3,729. And Verge: amount stolen, $2.7 million. Estimated cost of 1 hour attack, NA. Further, Zencash co-creator Rob Viglione argued the rise of mining marketplaces, where users can effectively rent mining hardware without buying it, setting it up, and running it, has made it easier, since attackers can use it to easily buy up a ton of mining power all at once, without having to spend the time or money to set up their own miners. Meanwhile, it's grown easier to execute attacks as these marketplaces have amassed more hashing power. Quote, "Hackers are now realizing it can be used to attack networks," he said. As a data point for this, someone even erected a website, Crypto 51, showing how expensive it is to 51% attack various blockchains using a mining marketplace, in this instance one called NiceHash. Attacking Bitcoin, for example, might cost as little as $719 to attack using rented computing power. Quote, "If your savings are in a coin or anything else that costs less than $1 million a day to attack, you should reconsider what you are doing," end quote, tweeted Cornell professor Eamon Gunserer. On the other hand, larger cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin and Ethereum are harder to 51% attack because they're much larger, requiring more hashing power than NiceHash has available. Quote, "Bitcoin is too big and there isn't enough spare Bitcoin mining capacity sitting around to pull off the attack," Bonneau told CoinDesk. But while Crypto 51 gives a rough estimate, ETH Zurich researcher Arthur Jarvez argued to take the results with a grain of salt, since it, quote, ignores the initial costs of buying hard and software. Quote, "Thus the calculations are oversimplified in my mind," he added. The solution? A longer wait. Jarvez further argues it's worth putting these attacks into context. Though a 51% attack is perhaps the most famous cryptocurrency attack, it's not necessarily the worst in his mind. He pointed to other malicious bugs, such as the one found in Zcoin, where if exploited, a user would have been able to print as many Zcoin as they would like. But 51% attacks are still troubling, since they can still be worthwhile sometimes, impacting exchanges or whoever happens to be in the crosshairs of the attacker. Quote, "As an industry, we have to put an end to this risk," Viglione said, pointing to efforts on Zencash to stop this from happening again. Either way, one way for users or exchanges to make sure they aren't defrauded is to only accept money that's older or has been buried by more blocks of transactions called confirmations. The more confirmations there have been, the harder the funds are to steal in a 51% attack. Initially, exchanges where Bitcoin Gold was stolen required only 5 confirmations, and the attacker was able to reverse all of them with their hashing power. In response to the attacks, they have upped the number of confirmations to 50, which has successfully plugged up the attacks, at least for now. Because of this, developers and researchers contend bigger blockchains with more hashing power behind them are more secure since they require fewer confirmations. As Bitcoin entrepreneur John Light put it, quote, "Remember this next time someone tells you they use altcoins because they're cheaper to use," end quote. All right, and I would like to thank Alyssa Hertig for that article. That one was a really good one on CoinDesk. I've been jumping back and forth. I got a lot of articles on all the attacks that are going on because I really, really enjoyed the Verge one last week. And this one was really good because I actually could not find one that was kind of at least a decent one that wasn't just like 2 minutes long that was talking about all the attacks in aggregate. Because it has definitely become a common and very real problem lately. And it has a lot of implications into the security of mining. Because, as the article says, this has always been theoretical, but we've not really seen many examples of it. And now it's just kind of running rampant. And I don't think it's going to slow down. I think we're going to see a lot of altcoins. People are talking about an altcoin season again, and we could end up in a situation where we have the exact opposite. We have Bitcoin break out and the altcoin market crash because people are realizing, specifically in proof of work coins that are smaller coins, it's just not that difficult to redirect already present hardware that somebody else has set up or that you have already set up towards a smaller coin, essentially run a bank heist, and then keep the hardware mining on another coin. Or revert it back, like so let's say it's Bitcoin hardware. Like anything that's using Bitcoin's hashing algorithm right now is in serious. It should be, you know, really, really reconsidering their model. And it also has interesting implications of the divisibility of the security mechanism. Like it seems like you can't break up the same proof of work reliably into smaller segments, whereas proof of stake does not have this problem. However, proof of stake is centralized in another way. But in the same way, you can, or in contrast to proof of work, you can divide it up into small localities because proof of stake really is not much different than what we have set up with shares and current ownership of businesses and a lot of different firms and institutions are literally a form of proof of stake. They're just not quite so direct in the application of it. So it would be interesting to see, does this mean that proof of stake can be localized into smaller economies, smaller communities, but proof of work is incentivized to either be, like, there's only really one security economy for each individual proof of work? Because if you can repurpose hardware, attacking is just so easy. The cost difference. Bitcoin gold, 1.86 million stolen for $3,936. Now, let's say their estimates are even off by like 10x. It still doesn't even matter. You're talking about $39,000 to get almost $2 million. That is not a risky investment at all. Well, in the grand scheme of what your possible payout is, obviously there's a risk. You might not succeed. The exchange might not, or might recognize the attack happening. Who knows? But this is so crazy. And I think this year is going to be a big, big shift in the altcoin markets in particular. It's got me worried just about, will we realize, will the market easily discern between coins that can survive and coins that are not secure? Or will all altcoins come in a bag together, essentially? Will it just be people will dump altcoins and move into Bitcoin? Because I'm not totally confident still in the market's ability to assess the security of these things individually. So we could very well see that proof of stake coins plummet along with weak proof of work coins if this unfolds, if this market does adjust to accommodate this information. It's kind of scary that a lot of these coins have not fallen in value because of these attacks, because these are serious attacks. This is a kind of a scary thing. And I love John Light's quote right at the end of that. Remember this the next time someone tells you they use altcoins because they're cheaper. That's an extremely good point, is you pay for it. The cost is in time. The cost is in security. If you can't feel safe about using your coins for 2 days, it's not cheaper. It's not cheaper, and it's certainly not faster. It doesn't matter how many transactions you can fit in those blocks. That is a higher cost, slower, crappy network. That's what that is. And it doesn't matter if it's $10 a transaction on Bitcoin. It's $10 and done, not 10 cent wait for 2 days. So it's really interesting to see this play out. I don't know. I imagine this is probably going to get, until the exchanges respond, or maybe they'll require, 50 confirmations for practically every coin that duplicates a proof of work or of a more dominant coin. But unless they make a pretty widespread change, I can't see any solid incentive as to why this wouldn't continue happening. And now with the data pretty much available with Crypto 51, this website is really awesome. I had no idea this existed, but literally calculating the cost of the attack and having specific numbers that someone can work off of for a risk assessment, I think that would do the opposite of discouraging people from doing it. I think it would make people realize that it can absolutely be done. So there's a lot of stuff going on with mining. Bluemat, I'm not sure if anybody has heard, or if you've heard this, but Bluemat apparently has a... Bluemat, by the way, is a Bitcoin Core developer. And I know we've talked about it a number of times, and it's talked about everywhere, about the quote-unquote ASIC problem and trying to fix mining centralization. But there was a really interesting proposal by the Bluemat, and I haven't dug much into this yet, but apparently it would allow people who are participating, miners who are participating in a mining pool, to specifically dictate by their miner rather than the mining pool which transactions are included in the block they're hashing. So they can still all pool their resources and produce blocks and pay out partially based on the hashing power available. But it's not the mining pool that has central control over what transactions are included. It's the thousands of miners that have accumulated into the pool to work together, which would really solve the centralization problem of pooled mining. And a peer-to-peer, you could essentially have a single pool mining the entire Bitcoin network, and you wouldn't really have the risk of centralization. Now, I don't know the specifics of that. May be a bit of a stretch because I don't know the specifics of the proposal, and I've only saved it for reading in my big long list of shit to read. So I will get there, I'm sure. And this article also did not. I want to dig into this too because there's so many other attacks. But this one did not talk about Electronium, and if I'm not mistaken, Electronium was hit with a attack as well. And Verge has been hit again since their patch. Daniel Goldman has another article on it that I've read, and I may include that in the podcast of doing the Verge hack again. So a lot unfolding right now, particularly in the altcoin markets, and 2018 is going to be a big year for learning what security means in the blockchain space and what is and isn't secure. Hopefully this will be good in the long term, and hopefully this doesn't kill the altcoin market altogether. I would like to see, it'll be interesting to see if we have a handful of dominant proof-of-work coins, and then we could still essentially see a wide array of proof-of-stake coins. Proof of stake is really interesting to me. I don't think of it as very centralized. I don't think of it as very decentralized, but I see it as a better centralized alternative. So in the context of like Apple stock, like as an investor, to have in some ways like provable authority over the Apple company. I mean, yes, you still essentially get that through the court system and stuff, but in a way, I would still think that this is almost better. Maybe it's not, because if you lose your keys, you still have to revert back to the court system. So I don't know. It's really difficult to assess if it's a realistic use of proof of stake and if it's just going to introduce problems or if it's going to be way more efficient. But I think we're entering a stage of the economy and what's happening in kind of the macroeconomic sense is we're losing trust in our financial institutions. And I think a proof of stake mechanism for ownership and participating in some finance or a company, like stock in a company or options and these kinds of things, to be able to, and ETFs, to be able to know that what you're investing in has not been manipulated in the amount and that there's some degree, like to have a copy of the ledger of all Apple stock to know that Apple stock isn't just being secretly issued and handed out to people, like without everybody knowing, or even more importantly, with something like a gold ETF. Granted, you're still trusting an institution to add ETF contracts that were supposed to correspond to physical gold somewhere. So, you know, how do you really solve that problem? But you've got a looking back, kind of applying Parabolic Trav's and Pratik's work about complete contracts. Can you use that transparency and the ability of someone to run software that's double checking your ledger? Is that a way to rebuild trust with your customers and investors in an age where trust looks like it's dying? So proof of stake has some really interesting applications to me. I don't really see it as a very helpful way to create a decentralized network, but I see it as a way to make a pseudo-centralized institution or company, and it's localizable. It's you can divide it up. It doesn't have that problem of proof of work, whereas proof of work is a great way to get people who do not know each other at all to cooperate and reach consensus. I think proof of stake could possibly be a better way to get people who do know each other and are running a centralized business or firm of some sort to cooperate and trust each other a little bit better than in the current obfuscated system that we deal with. So, I don't know. There's going to be a whole lot happening in the altcoin market, and I think the consequences of this stuff, I don't see this stopping anytime soon. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm looking at this stupid crypto51.app, Einsteinium. Right now it costs, the estimate is $60 for a 1 hour attack. And the power that you can rent on NiceHash is 7,676% of the hash power of Einsteinium. So it would not cost you much at all to rent that power. You can easily do it on NiceHash and attack Einsteinium. And the market cap is $40 million. So there's no telling how much you can get out of attacking that network. Then we've got Feathercoin, that's Paccoin, excuse me, uses X11. We've got Equihash. I mean, we're breaking down all that. You've got to check this website out. This mess will blow your mind. And if you're not looking at this before you invest in some altcoin, oh, you're missing the whole do your own research part of this market. And what we have done essentially in 2017 is create a massive honeypot for liquidity, avenues for liquidity, marketplaces, and then this huge, $300 billion marketplace incentivizing a whole community of hackers to turn a bunch of theoretical attacks into live mainnet attacks. And we have the liquidity now. We have the value sitting and waiting. They have the exchanges, and they have all the pieces now, finally, to actually just start doing this. A year and a half ago, none of that existed. There were no exchange. If you were going to a 51% attack a network, you were never going to get it back into Bitcoin or some other more secure coin. You didn't have the liquidity to do it. You didn't have the exchanges to do it easily. There were no decentralized exchanges or over-the-counter markets big enough to handle it. And there wasn't enough money there to steal. Now, all of those conditions have been met. So, if you're holding altcoins, I suggest you go to this website, do a little bit of research, start digging into some more of these attacks. Keep listening to the Crypto Economy podcast, because we're going to cover a lot of this stuff. And, you know, we'll keep a close eye on this moving forward. And I'll try to hit this topic a little bit more, because I know there are a lot of altcoin investors out there. And hashtag Crayful Gang. It's a crazy, crazy crypto world. And there's going to be a whole lot of changes in 2018. Don't get screwed. Do your own research. All right. With that, I'll end my rant. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Again, it was by Alyssa Hartig at Coindesk.com. Be sure to check out, obviously, Coindesk.com. They always have good stuff. And I'll be sure to tag her on Twitter if I can find. I imagine I can find her Twitter page here. Yeah. Here she is. And I am not following her. That is unfortunate. Let me fix that right now. Okay, so I will tag her on the post, and check out the article for all the great links. Crypto 51, the website, by the way, for that. I'll post that actually in the thing as well. It's crypto51.app. And that's a really neat little website. And also links to more details, deeper details on the 51% attacks specifically, and the In Crypto Time argument, which is fun. I definitely should check that one out. But don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at The Crypto Economy, same on Medium.com. And I should have some articles coming out soon. I've been working on them. I'm trying to clean them up now. Keep an ear out on the horizon, and keep listening to the Crypto Economy podcast, and share it with all your friends who want to keep up on all the important stuff going on in Bitcoin and the crypto economy at large. Thanks for listening, guys, and I will catch you next time. Take it easy.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.